Good morning.
Good morning.
Right. Everybody's like, "Arr." Should I behave?
No.
No?
No need to.
Seriously? Half of you are looking at me like, what the heck did I sign up for? Don't worry, you're not safe. Even if you're all the way back, I know. He's one of those. I'm sorry. It happens. Should we start or not yet? What do you think? Yeah? We're right on time?
Well, that's 2 more minutes.
2 more minutes. No, we'll wait. We'll wait. It's all good. Why are they putting all the people on this side? You know what? Just for the fun of it, I'm going to go on this side. I'll just sit there and speak from there. I know. Whatever makes you happy, dude. So he's like, whatever, dude. Just leave me alone. Let me sleep. Great vino at La Rambla yesterday. And yeah, nice. Thank you for inviting the rest of us, dude. Nice. I know I was, actually. Yes. Yes. So amazing to talk about architectural patterns in the city where the main architect is the one who broke all the patterns. Knock your head on that one for 8:30 in the morning session in Tekken, dude. Anybody a big fan of Gaudí? There you go. I mean, come on, we're in a European conference and there is no references to good culture. I'm Mexican, not any other kind. Okay, guys, about to start. I still have no idea why you're all congregated on this side of the room. Something wrong there or something? Oh, they don't? Oh, it's, well, it was his fault. Good morning.
Good morning.
You don't have to scream. It's just. Name is Eduardo Kastner. I've been a CIO. I've been a chief architect and the principal architect at our virtualization private cloud initiatives. Now I'm a CTO for our server and cloud division in the Worldwide Enterprise and Partner Group. There's too many CTOs. Don't try to make sense of this. We don't either. But it's a pleasure to be here. I'll be loud at sometimes, and I'll get excited, and I'll start speaking very fast. And it's your fault if you don't stop me. Is that cool?
Yeah.
If you want to participate, I have absolutely no worries and no issues with that, so just participate. If you have a question, whatever. If you go too long, thank you, ladies. Truly appreciate that. If you want to participate seriously, just go ahead and shout out, but do me a favor, if we run too long, we will all stop you. Outside of that, I think you're going to enjoy this session. This session was built a little bit different than others that you've seen. It's all been built by dialogues with the people who are trying to adopt the cloud. So it's a little bit of a non-linear agenda, because again, this conversation is not necessarily linear. And I'm sure that out of the, whatever, 10 topics that I have here, 8 are going to be of your interest, or at least I hope so. And maybe 2 aren't, so just be patient. Is that fair? Yes, and everybody's asleep. I know. Let me be. So, you forgot to put, no, works, okay. So, this is the agenda. It's, like I said, a little loosely coupled. The part that I really like are the sample architectures, so I'll spend a lot of time there, right? Because I think that if you realize what's happening in the cloud, there's 2 types of people, or 2 types of companies. And it's very simple. There's the guy standing at the station saying, I'll wait for the next train. And there's the guy on the train saying, I'll just, you know, take 1 stop or 2 stops or 3 stops. Is that fair? You agree or you don't? Just move your head, even if you disagree. There you go. So understand, there's not a whole bunch of types of people adopting the cloud. It's like you either done a service in the cloud, and yours doesn't have to be like others, or you haven't. It's that simple. And the guy who hasn't is still waiting for something, right? Something magical, whether it be security or compliance or cost, right? It's waiting for something to happen to start adopting services. But I don't know if you noticed what I was trying to say, which is services. Cloud by itself is useless. I say this 10,000 times. It's about which service is of your interest. And until you don't catch that thing that you want to buy at the store, you're not going to buy anything. Not fair? So it's all about what the heck is the scenario that you see of value that you're going to end up using. That's it. We can stand here and talk for 7 hours about security, compliance, cost, benefit, job retention, job control, risk aversion, and all kinds of fun stuff. If you don't find something you want to buy at the shop, you're not going to buy anything. That's it. So that's why I'm going to go very interestingly trickling to the end, but the end is going to be where this is the buffet. What are you going to eat? And then at the end, you have to select something, right? You have to say, well, I want some of this and some of that. And then that's it. There you go. That's your cloud. Let's start. I've been trying to create in different parts of the world, believe it or not, this all started in Belgium. And not because you wouldn't believe it in Belgium, there's brilliant people in Belgium, I'm just saying it all started there. And then this list came from the New York one. I've been creating forums for chief architects or just head architects of IT, sit together and talk amongst themselves in a safe zone and develop IP. And it's fascinating because this is not where you get to tell anybody what the topic is. This is where people sit down and say, hey, you know, this is what troubles me. And all of a sudden you have 10 other people saying, nope, that's just you, man. Or they turn around and they say, no, yeah, that's the right one. So why is this fascinating? Because you get the right problems to solve. You see, there's 1,000 people that are brilliant that'll know how to solve a problem. But there's very few who knows what the right problem to go solve at is. So what was very interesting to me is this list. If you already read it, I know. But it was very interesting to see the list by itself. So this is probably my next talk, or my next three talks. But I just wanted to expose this to you because I found this list to be fascinating. Cloud sprawl is interesting with virtual sprawl, but I think shadow IT versus rogue IT is a really good topic to start thinking. Because I'll tell you something, and just, you don't have to raise your hand or participate in any way you don't want, but just move your head, okay, if you agree or disagree. Shadow IT, by definition, there's no definition, okay, so I'm just telling you what this team of architects put together. Shadow IT is sort of black ops. In other words, is I have something that's redundant to what IT does, and I'm doing it for power's sake, right? So it's not necessarily beneficial, it's just I want my own, right? Rogue IT is something IT doesn't do, doesn't have the capability to do, and it is a need of the business. It's a true need. It's something that, oh, and that's Rouge, by the way. So, or is that Rogue? Did I get it right? That's Rouge, yeah. That proves to you I am Mexican, not... Okay, that's spell checker at its finest. So, and they said you couldn't draw a joke in this place, you see? You just had to spell check incorrectly in English. The point is simple, Rogue IT is something you want to foment, it's something you want to drive, it's something you want to push. Because Rogue IT is maybe where you get innovation nowadays versus established IT. Is that fair? It's an interesting concept. It's about how do I make the right people work on the right projects versus kill all innovation until I'm dead because I'm useless, I'm a blocker. It should be a good topic for all of you. Then there's a whole bunch of really good ones. We've all talked about death of the perimeter, but we haven't talked about how to die properly or how to die gracefully without a perimeter. And if you haven't seen the newspaper, I carry around the newspaper all the time that has, this is like a couple weeks old, Why is the USA Today? Because I didn't have any other decent newspaper that had this article. But front page, it says all the incorrect things that have happened to companies in the last 6 months. So it's a fantastic front page. It says, this is what happened to Home Depot, to JP Morgan, all the American companies that went through all these terrible things that have happened. And why is this a fantastic? Not because I wished anybody any ill will, but it just shows that death of the perimeter is here. We already exposed that we're not safe with the current methods that we have for architecting solutions, and that we have to rethink about this very seriously. Now, I'm not going to just throw problems at you the whole session, so give me 2 more seconds on this slide, and then I'll move away, okay? I know somebody's like, good, enough of this. But then we have some other interesting things, like consumption. This one here, the one before the last, I found fascinating. Because most people don't understand that nobody knows how to kill an application once it hits production. Think about it. Once an application goes into a production environment, that's it. It's lived forever. Until the person who owns it dies. Right? It's longer than your health records. I'm trying to make a bad joke, but you're getting it. And why am I saying that? Because we don't have those assets in any other fashion. Think about it. Even a warehouse that your company owns has a life cycle, and an application just doesn't. And we've talked about this forever. So thinking of an application like an asset, like a financial asset, is actually a fascinating thought. Because if you can put a life cycle on it, and you can say this is the medium life cycle depreciation, and this is the reinvestment moment, then all of a sudden the application becomes an asset that can be attributed with losses. Let me say this different. Let's say I'm an insurance company and I'm still running on COBOL. By the way, this is a true case study. It happened to me. Why Minnesota? I don't know. Could have happened to me in Austria. It just happened in Minnesota. I wasn't there. It was minus 40. I didn't want to be there. Minus 40, by the way, is minus 40 on any centigrade or Fahrenheit. Okay, don't get excited. He's like, was he talking? And it doesn't matter anymore. It's freaking cold, okay? And I was there, and this guy came up to me, and he said, I'm going to retirement homes to find COBOL programmers. I'm not kidding. To be able to maintain my code. If you got to that point, which many companies still do, many companies that you represent still do, if you're at that point, you don't realize that that asset is actually costing you money. But because nobody put it that way. Because God forbid we talk about it on the financial engineering side. By the way, I respect engineers of all dimensions, not just IT engineers. Somebody who builds a plane has the right of passage for me, just like somebody who writes a really complex program. But the same thing, somebody that does good, correct, not incorrect, financial engineering. So that's an interesting point there. The data mess is something I'm not going to talk about, but I want you to understand nobody has a grasp on this. Nobody has solved this equation. Just because line of business data is growing at an average of 50% per year, and email data is growing at an average of 400% per year. And by the way, if you want some interesting statistics, we are graduating 1.4x people versus 44x growth of data per year. So if you're thinking, oh, we'll throw people at the data problem, right. Think of it, 1.4x of people graduating from colleges, universities, et cetera, institutes versus 44x growth data. It's impossible. We lost this battle before we even started. So enough about the next topic. Let's start about this topic. Let's talk about the evolution. The evolution for me is all about three things. And this is really foundational. The first one is, it's about you stopping with this Lord of the Rings sensation of my server, my storage, mine, my precious. Somebody was going to go there. But they all do this, right? It's like, who's the owner of that storage? Oh, that's mine. And are you going to share it on Sundays and from 2 to 3? No. Well, what's the problem there is every application ends up with its own standards. And then you have too many standards to manage. That's it. It's that simple. We can embellish this and make a 2-hour talk about it. But it's all about if you have too many of anything to manage, it becomes such a complex problem by itself that you can't even categorize what you're managing. So it's all about extreme standardization. And we've said this for a while, but I want you to get this. If you don't get this point here, everything else dies. It's all about extreme standardization. What is extreme standardization? 3 standards, not 15. Did you hear me right? I didn't say one. That's wrong too. It's three standards. It's not 15. That's it. So we're like, well, does that mean open source? And does that mean Linux? And does that mean Unix? And does that mean... I don't care. I just said three, not 15. Second, the old stacks are dead. Let's just agree on this, okay? If you're still talking of Unix versus Linux versus whatever, Atabas the other day, I was talking to somebody, it's dead. It's not the conversation anymore. The three new silos are rather simple. Justified legacy. I'll say this three times because nobody dares say that at this conference. There has to be some justified legacy. Nobody was born yesterday, especially nobody in this audience. Look, some people here have the same haircut I do. What's wrong with you? But is that fair? I mean, come on. Nobody was born yesterday, so you can't just say, I'm going to kill everything that was, right? And I'm going to start anew. There's no evergreen. That very seldomly exists. And the few people who have the opportunity to do evergreen, they do it once. You know what evergreen means, right? Just start from completely fresh.
Greenfield.
No, evergreen is even worse. Evergreen is that you say, I'm going to kill it and start anew every single time. So it does exist. I didn't just make that up, by the way. But you see, that is very, very hard to happen. So what happens is we end up with three different things. One is justified legacy, hopefully not more than 25% of your platform. By financial engineering, be justified legacy. And then you get another whatever, 30-something percent of private cloud. Or really well-managed IT. Whatever you want to call it, God bless you. And the last one is cloud services. Why do I call it cloud services? Because I don't care if you say community cloud, as in government cloud or financial services cloud. You see, community cloud for me has as much merit as public cloud. And if you don't believe in it, has anybody done a Swift transfer of money ever? Any company here doesn't do Swift transfers? Don't raise your hand. Everybody does. I don't need to ask you that. So everybody's participating in some form of community cloud. The point is, don't think of public cloud only as IT services. That is wrong. There's going to be many more community clouds that already exist that we're going to have to integrate more and more into. And it's been called EDI for ages, right? So, last but not least, it takes the same amount of time and effort to expand a legacy platform than it takes to grab one workload out of that platform and pull it out. And by the way, I was working with an insurance company in Puerto Rico. It's a very interesting company because it's really one of the top 100 worldwide. So it's a fairly decent size insurance company. They had an Atabas workload and they moved it to Windows, God forbid, on an emulator. Oh my God, did he say that? And it only worked 100% faster and it cost them 1,000% less. And until they saw it, they didn't say, oh, well, that just gave me 5 years to migrate off of it or do whatever I want with it. So my point is, don't fight yourself. You see what I'm saying? Don't have religions in IT, because they're going to kill you, financially speaking. You have to see the value and benefit of renovation, of evolution. And sometimes it's as painful as re-architecting, but sometimes it's as painful as admitting that re-hosting works. You see my point? It's not always the same strategy. So the mistake here is thinking that you're only going to do one thing, which is renovate, which means re-architect. Re-architect is one weapon in the whole holster of things you should be doing here. So with that said, I just blew my whole slide, but you understand, right? There's many ways that you can do this. And what was fascinating for me is last year I was very focused on modernization initiatives. So this is not only from old mainframe, but also old SQL, old Oracle, old Atabas, whatever, old, right? And whatever you want to categorize as old, I'm good with. And so once you start thinking about that, you start saying, okay, there's many interesting things, but then you start saying, what's the difference? And this was my aha moment. What's the difference between this motions of modernization to motions of going to the cloud? Look at the slide. Tell me if you find many differences of modernization versus motions of going to the cloud. There aren't. They're exactly the same, right? So we can actually learn from ourselves, God forbid, and the history we've created. So it's an interesting thought, because then this opens up a whole bunch of new architectural paradigms. Now, What I like about the cloud is it really should break our mind into a different dimension. Here, let me explain one of the things that it's pretty obvious, but then when you start thinking about it, you're like, well, yeah, it was pretty obvious, but I didn't start this way. Which is, if you think of disaster recovery or business continuity, it's a very simple chart, right? The more money you spend on this, the faster you can do business continuity or disaster recovery. Well, if you architect properly, I'll say this three times. If you architect for resiliency, the third time is if you actually build resilient services into your architecture, then shouldn't this line be vertical? How much more should it cost you to build a resilient service in the cloud? I mean, I put the line a little bit slanted just for fun, right? But shouldn't it be vertical? If I actually architected with resilient methods, I don't need a DR. Is that fair? Because DR is it. It's part of the whole architecture of the service. So that's the benefit of re-architecting. When somebody tells you, hey, what's the benefit of re-architecting and rebuilding the whole thing? Well, maybe that I just end up with a service where you don't need to spend X million euros by, you know, every July to have another data center in another country where you don't want to. Which makes no sense because, by the way, every time it fails, it doesn't give us the service that we want. Because it's never worked. Why did it never work? If anybody disagrees with me, please raise your hand. I would love to see that first person in my life. Love to meet them. Oh, but you get, but you would have to do service resiliency. Service exactly. Cloud, then but then you're in the cloud. So you're not that person, you see? You see?
You still have an additional cost to go to another competitor from Washington State.
Yes, yes, yes. No. Listen, you're going to have to re-architect, yes. But the whole point of this says it's not about subsidizing. See, I'll say it differently. This is like capacity planning. This is like security. This is like DR. We've been subsidizing the app forever. We're like, no, those are our dumb children. Don't talk to them. Let's just do it for them. Let's make their bed. So it's like, oh, no, the application doesn't know how to recover itself. So let's build a cluster around it. You don't like that one? Okay, let's do a load balancer around it. Oh, you don't like that one? Oh, let's do some data mirroring around that. We've been doing it forever. Am I getting too excited and speaking too fast? No? Wow. I'll go faster. So you see the point? We've been subsidizing the application forever because we didn't tell the guys at the application level, it's your job. It's your job to build resiliency into the app, to build consumption units into the app so that I can measure all this. You're like, well, that's too hard. Well, nobody said it was going to be easy. But this is the opportunity now. So probably one of my best slides. Hope you enjoy it. This is as far as the demo goes. But I wanted to put in a slide the whole story. And the story for me starts like this. Let's just say, and I truly mean this, that you have the best possible implementation of a private cloud that there is. I just gave all of you a ton of credit. You saw that? That was nice of me, huh? And it says the following. It says, it starts with you understanding that a server and an air handler is the same thing, a device. It's a physical device. You see, we put so much more stock on a server or a SAN than when we buy a PDU. Is that fair? Like, oh no, that PDU, that's an ugly piece of equipment. But the SAN, ooh, that's my ring, that's my precious. That's my own. The load balancer, ooh, that's cool. Understand, it's a piece of equipment. It's a consumption of electricity. That's all it is. Okay? And as a piece of equipment, you have to start aggregating it into a service. And that's where you virtualize the service and you turn it into software-defined whatever you want, whether it be networking, storage, or compute. And then you add application services and all of a sudden somebody can come and eat at your buffet. It's that simple. Until you get to that point, you're self-serving. Is that fair? This is like me building the house because I like to build houses, right? Not because somebody's going to come live in it. So once you get to this point, for me, the cloud is something a little bit simpler than for most. Number one, it's a method to connect. Okay? So it's networking services. Number two is a collection of compute services. Number three is a collection of data services. Number four, it's a collection of app services. And then once you have a method to monitor, configure, control, measure consumption across the board, for me, hybrid is a simple story. It's you're consuming from one bucket and the other. If you're consuming from just one side, you're private. You're consuming from the other side, you're just public. I don't think anybody's going to exist anymore in just one side of the equation anymore. So I believe everybody's going to be hybrid. God bless you. Why? Because I don't know any business that said to anybody else, no, I don't want to connect to the rest of the world. I don't want to do business. By the way, let's talk compliancy for a second. Did you know that if you use a country's currency, that country has the right to audit you? Did you know that? So therefore, this whole, you know, the U.S. security or the U.S. security division or the European, if you transact in a currency, that state has the right. So it's as simple as, let's stop this whole paranoid of I'm not going to do business, I'm not going to be able, and I don't want to give anybody the right to. You can't, not in this world anymore. It's just a question of how. It's not a question of when. You see, I think today's world is of the brave. It's of the person that says, I'm going to solve the problems, not I'm going to avoid the problems. Is that fair? So it's really not about whether I need to be compliant or I need to kill my perimeter. It's about how do I do it. And the one who does it the best way wins. Right? So let's talk about this for a second. We can talk about different VPN connections and different direct and PLS connections. But for me, the real difference about doing security properly, it's about the cadence of the process. The cadence, in proper Spanish, is the rhythm. Okay? It's truly about the rhythm. And it's about you being more paranoid than the people attacking you. So if you're more paranoid than the people attacking you, maybe you stand a chance in this brave new world. And so what we do is we go every 6 months into a full renovation of our standards and to a full evolution and decision of which other compliance mechanisms we're going to go and do. So if you end up in a public data center, I can tell you one thing. The proper ones are going to have more security than you would ever want to institute in your own. So the right way to think about this is, let me go with one that's going to do more than I would do because I don't even have the budget or even better, the desire to go this deep. Because what's wrong about you getting, example, Department of Defense level security when you're running a financial business? Or you getting the benefit of a health industry security when you're running a financial business? You see, you want that. You want them to have more security and more processes than you do. It's obvious. Because all this means a ton of money and really hard to implement. Because even the ones who have the money, this is really hard to implement. It takes a lot of the right people. So it's not just people, it's a lot of the right people, which are very hard to get. And once you do this, the real method is, are you building the right security mechanisms? Let me raise my voice even harder. If you're not architecting for security, stop blaming everybody else. Is that fair? So if you're not encrypting anything and everything, then why are you, right? It's like, oh, they're not secure. Wait. Who's they? Did you forget this is a tango where the two of us are dancing? Which part of here did you disassociate yourself from building your own architecture? Is that correct? So it's really all about the half that is also yours. Because look, if you buy, now this is a fascinating conversation I've had with CIOs all over the world. If you buy SaaS, you're still responsible for data compliancy. You want me to say that different? If you buy Office 365, I'm responsible for your data? Exactly, now you get it. Let me say another example. If you buy IaaS, am I responsible for your architecture? So you see, it's a slide. You get the point? The more, the less you buy, the less I'm responsible for the standards and securities, because the less part of it I'm running. If you're configuring the machine and you're providing all of it for that part of the architecture, it's your responsibility. But it's always going to be a tango. It's always going to be two people dancing. It's never going to be just one. So most of this agreements, most of this compliancy is always called a business agreement. It means I do everything that I need to give you the components to go certify. You see what I'm saying? So let's say you say I want to be whatever, right? A Basel III compliant. Okay. Then I have to give you all the right components so you add your own, whatever those may be, little or much, so that you can go be compliant. But it's not something that I'm going to end up with because the service, the end service, the end financial, health, education, whatever service is not going to be mine. So with that said, let's start with a little bit of the transitions. Did I say that this was a loosely coupled agenda? So stay with me. There's a lot of little topics here that pop up, and that's what's fascinating. The next conversation is, come on, there you go. How do the jobs evolve in this new, brave new world? If you think this is not important, this is the main blocker for everything cloud. Because everybody's concerned, we are all concerned, I'm concerned about what's my next step. We're all concerned about how does this affect me and how does this take my career anywhere. So what's fascinating is if you look at this slide, and I hope you enjoy this slide, it took a lot to build. We realized one thing. I know it was, you know, but you know why it was hard? Because nobody could agree on the new definition of the jobs. Everybody came up with a different title. It was like, no, I want to be C-3PO and I want to be R2-D2. It's like, dude, I don't know how you beep. Exactly. It's like, do you beep or do you talk? I don't know. It's whatever makes you happy. But the thing here is, I hope you agree that all these evolutions were already in place before the cloud. Is that right? So the only thing the cloud did was maybe create this DevOps hybrid of a human being, right? Maybe. Exactly, maybe. I'm not even sure that that was it. So understand, it will speed them up, but we were already on this path. Nothing changed. The people who are going to fail are the ones who think they need less talent. Is that fair? So I can forecast that right now with all due humility. The people who are going to fail are the ones that think they need less people and dumber people. In this brave new world, you need maybe a little more because we've been cut too short, too close to the bone. Is that fair? And maybe better trained. Okay? So it's a completely different world. Now, this is a great, great slide for two reasons. It talks about what DevOps is in a very simplistic, dumb way. And I like simplistic, dumb because sometimes we complicate. I have a slide that talks about every single nitty and gritty aspect of DevOps. And I'll tell you something. This is either 25 products that you integrate from the open source community or Team Foundation Server. Now, don't use ours. I don't care. Use them. Good for you. But the point at the end of the day is three choices. One, are you going to integrate 25 products or are you going to buy an integrated stack that maybe doesn't have the rich and crazy functionality that the 25 have? I don't know. Your choice. Fair? Your choice. You can die by diversity or you can buy by inclusion. Both of them are honorable deaths. Second, did you get the point that not one person can do all this? And third, it means team. It means we have to act like a team. That's the part that kills this, is we actually have to act like a team. So infrastructure would have to set the standards that maybe a DevOps engineer or a developer follows. God forbid we don't actually act and we actually set standards. So you see, this is the really complicated, where does the bar end? Where does it start? But this is the type of the guy who solves this is the one who will inherit the earth, right? There's the guy who solves this right will get the next step, and the one who doesn't will die in the process and just continue doing operations the way we do. But how fast are you going to release a product? Let me share with you a story. I was working with an insurance company. Again, I don't know why insurance, but you know, I've been working with a lot of insurance companies over the past 2 years. I don't know why again. This insurance company came up to us and they said, we take 15 days to do one single Monte Carlo simulations. Everybody here knows what that is? Creditworthiness. Okay? So it's an HPC type application that you go in and you get data scientists and data labs and data people and data, right? All the white robe people, and they grab the data. I don't know what the heck they do with the data. They put it in an HPC cluster. They build a cube. They define the cube. They constitute the cube. Then they run the process. 15 days later, they come up with an Excel spreadsheet and say, voila, get your 15 smartest people around this Excel spreadsheet and interpret the hell out of it. Interpret, you see? My Spanish comes out every now and then. Interpretalo. So then they sit down and they see this Excel spreadsheet and they read in between it as if it has some magical power, and they say, you, sir, are worthy of a credit card. And they offer it to you. And maybe once out of 15, they get it right. Because maybe you say, yeah, you know what? Not a bad idea. I want another credit card like a hole in my head. Give it to me, please. Well, don't think that that's a joke, because this company was actually dying. They were losing to an internet company who was doing Monte Carlo simulations at a rate of 100 per hour. So they were offering you stuff, you know, 5-6 offers per week, versus this company was able to do one analysis every 15 days. So what did we do? We extracted the data from the mainframe. We didn't kill the mainframe, God forbid. No, we didn't. We just extracted the data from it. It took us a month to find the guy who actually knew which data and from where to extract it. It took us 2 weeks to put it up in SQL DB, and it took us less than a day to put a Power BI front end to it. And these guys can run Monte Carlo simulations at the rate that they want, 100 per second. We don't care. It's all about how deep is your credit card. And this thing is so cheap that it doesn't even get to $20,000 a month of consumption. So versus what they used to pay for what they're getting, right now their revenues are growing at 4% per month. Let me explain this slowly. If you think cloud is about bottom line engineering, about bottom line, about saving money, about efficiency, you missed it. Okay? You missed it. You didn't get it. The train left the station. You did not get it. Okay? I'm not calling you dumb, by the way. Do not put that in the comments. You know what I just said? It's about top line. It's about how much more money you can make. Cloud is all about how much more can you make. Because you're going to become to a point, stay with me on this one, where you're at a zero-sum game. A saving game gets to the point where you can't save any longer. Fair? So saving will get to a point where that's it. You saved all that you can save without stop doing it. Making money, making more, there's no sum, there's no zero sum. That can just keep growing. So the point is, stop looking at how much more efficient you're going to become, because it gets to a point where you're not going to be more efficient. It's called cost of doing business. Did I get too excited there? It's about how much more can you make. Who do you think is going to get the next promotion here? The guy who saves the company another percent, or the guy who makes another 10% in revenue and margin? Who do you think is going to get it? It's that simple, right? Now, you may not want to be type B, but guess what? The type B is always going to win. That's the sad reality that we live in. So how did I get there from DevOps? Do you know? The mind is a mysterious object, I'm telling you. Take a stand. This is my demo. Tom is our track manager. Tom is the guy who wrote this paper. You think I'm joking? Tom wrote a brilliant paper, which is the Cloud Services Foundation Reference Model. I am not going to do it justice. Why did I put it up here? I want you guys to go read it. I'm not kidding. And yes, you get a copy of the slides. They're published on ComNet. I don't have an idea how you're going to get it. It's just some magical way that appears in Channel 9, and you get it eventually, okay? But once you get it, look up for this document. It's a brilliant document that says two things. It says, these are the functions that your company should have in order to operate properly under cloud, from what we learned from talking to different people who are doing it. And second, this is what each function does. So what is this good for? Benchmarking. This is so that you come and you say, this is what I'm doing versus this is what I'm seeing out there. It's a great exercise. It doesn't mean you have to do everything that's here. It just means take a look at it and benchmark and compare. So operationally talking, I was a CIO for 9 years. So operationally talking, this is a really good chart, because you can say, am I doing all the functions or am I missing anything? And now, let's talk a little bit about architecture. So I don't really like this slide, but I always keep it, just because you can read the whole thing. But for me, the real richness of this slide is, are you thinking about resiliency different? Like I said at the beginning, you see, for me, resiliency and compliance and security are like parenthood. It's not something you do on the weekend. Okay? You don't go to a place to do parenthood. You're either parenting all the time or you're not. For those of you who have children, understand exactly what I just said. Okay? You can't just switch it off. You can't say, I'm not going to be a dad today, or I'm not going to be a mom today. That's it. You go do whatever you want, dude. I don't even know who you are. Well, I do that sometimes with my children. But that's for fun. Just because they have my genes. So it's actually fun to see how they destroy the universe. But what's fun about this is that was just recorded for posterity, wasn't it? Fun. I know my kid is going to find this out in like 20 years and said, you said this. But understand, at the end of the day, what I'm trying to tell you is you have to make this part of your practice. There can't be a special division in your company that does compliance. You see what I'm saying? It's not like, oh, the mom does the parenting for both of you and the dad doesn't. Like, you're either parenting correctly or you're not. You're either doing security as a team, everybody, or you're not. And it's the same thing with resiliency. It's either you're building it into your services or you're not. There's no middle ground there. Now, once you do that, let's talk about some of the considerations. I really love the companies that came to me and said, once I started talking to people about how to do this properly, and they said, virtualization is not an option. It's you're either 100% virtualized or nothing. You see what I'm saying? So the standard is not we're going to get to 100%. It's no, the standard is 100%, and let's start justifying away from it. So then only 5 people come back and say, well, I'm willing to go to the CEO, so all the way up, and justify why the heck I need a physical server. Okay, fine, let's go fight that. But that's instead of having 100 people come in and say, we will get to 50% virtualization eventually. Now, you didn't like my virtualization example. Let's say automation. That one you're going to like more. You're either 100% automated or you don't make it to production. Holy moly. You see where I'm going now? It's like you start your standard. So in this brave new world, the standard doesn't go into 50% increments or 30% increments. It says we're all in or we're not. Right? Again, another dumb, incorrect analogy that you shouldn't make in a public conference that's being recorded. You're either pregnant or you're not. Right? There's not halfway pregnant. And so this is the way that these standards work. And for the people who really make them work, it's like you're either 100% automated or you're not. It's in your DNA or it's a side project. And if it's a side project, it really never makes it. The next one is, once you finish with all the infrastructure ones, we as architects get in love and we fall in love with our own solutions. And if it's agile and scrum, then everything has to be agile and scrum, right? Like, no, that's it. From now on, nothing else exists. All the things we learned in the 80s and the 90s and the whatever, forgotten, you know? Those are old people. They all should die. We should kill them in the corner. I'll tell you something. Nothing was born yesterday. And there's a ton of architectural methods that are brilliant. There's one that just came out, Roger's sessions here, you can see the link. It's called Snowman Architecture. It's a brilliant solution, but it's not worth for everything. It's not the best architectural method for every single application. I'm just trying to tell you, there's going to be 1,000 little patterns that you're going to find in the cloud that are more agile because you don't not, you see, in the other one, you had to buy the bicycle and you had to learn how to ride the bicycle. And then eventually you had methods of using the bicycle. Here, because the bicycle is a standard one, there's 1,000 methods of how to use it. So it just became so much more richer than that. And I'll show you some patterns coming forward. But the point is, please start experimenting. Please start thinking about different methods and try different methods. Because the whole thing that I'm trying to say, and I hope this one sticks really well in your mind, it's a brave new world in the sense of try many, use best. You got that? So if you're not trying many and using best, you didn't get that today is the only time you're going to get ever in history, because before it was so expensive to try that you had to decide best and then try one. And now it's a try many, use best. So don't be afraid to fail. Don't be afraid to look for new ways to fail, because only out of failure And this was said in a couple sessions yesterday. Will you get the best pattern? And trust me, you're not going to get it the first time. That is the mistake. Ego is going to be our killer here. Thinking that your method is the most beautiful one is not going to be the one that wins. It's actually when you throw it up against the wall and see if it sticks. And you're going to have to throw 10 or 20 before you see this is the best one. Okay? So, by the way, what's the difference between busy signal and workflow? Anybody? Because I love people that say, oh, we didn't go into patterns. Anybody has a difference between busy signal pattern versus workflow? Workflow means that the users decide the next step. Busy signal is the same as a workflow, but it's automated within the system. Okay? So busy signal is the system itself has its own regulating mechanisms that say don't, so stop here until this process is finished. Workflow is approval method, but it's essentially the same thing. Just one has user interaction, the other one doesn't. Just a simple example of all the different methods that you could have. Now, let's talk about paths to get there. And this is probably the best and most important part of the whole talk, and the most boring one. So this is the one you're going to like the least. You have to grab your top 10 applications. You have to grab your top 100. If you're brave, you can grab your 5,000. I don't recommend it. I've seen three companies that grabbed their 5,000 apps and were successful. Out of everybody else, just grab your top 20. That's it. And catalog them. You see my point? Just put them in the right silo. Are they going to be ad hoc? Are they going to be, you know, legacy type architecture? Are they going to be private cloud-ish, right? Or are they going to go into public services? And then re-architect. That's your roadmap. That's it. But do this as a company. Don't do this as an architect. Is that fair? Agree with the rest of the people and make the journey part of the team. And once you do that, you agree that you're making an architectural selection. That's what you're making. When you're saying, I'm going to put this app for the next 3 years in silo A or B or C, well, look at the services. Because it's going to be fascinating when you're in silo one and ad hoc and you say, I want federated identity. I don't know if you got it. You just shot yourself in the foot. Because silo one does not have federated identity. Well, I'll make a hole and I'll put a plugin and I'll buy some custom code. And now you start stitching and twitching between all this thing and making it again complex and complex and complex. And the more complex you make this, the more it's going to be impossible to actually run. Maintain, update, et cetera, in the future. Has anybody thought about what's going to happen with cloud legacy? Let's blow our mind up. Let's go, what the heck did he say? What's up in 5 years when I hope I'm standing here in front of you, both of us wonderfully successful, still talking about how my children are destroying the world? And what are we going to talk about? What do you think? We're going to talk about cloud legacy. About, oh my God, you use this three clouds, and how the heck do you move from them now? You see, it's all a matter of time. Is that fair? It will all happen. Yes, we all get old. Even those ones who think you won't lose your hair, it'll happen. I know. I'm sorry, man. It's nothing personal. So, be happy. Read the slide. It's font minus six. It's impossible. Hate me for it. I don't care. There's two things that are important on this slide. And it's not the architect and right side of the slide. It's the left side of the slide that's important. What are the triggers for renovating your applications? When do you select an app for renewal? When do you select a service for renewal? See, that's fascinating. When is it that you say this service is up for financial, technical, architectural, and or service renovation? Because once you select the right triggers, like new application, business initiative, tech refresh, enhanced SLA, whatever you want, once you select those, and you say, yes, this is the right one where I get budget to do this, right? Or time, or effort, or money, whatever. Once you get that, then the rest of the project starts. See, but if you don't have the right triggers and those triggers are not agreed in your company, it'll be a missionary statement every time, right? Let's a crusade, right? Let's all grab our swords and go to Jerusalem. It's impossible. It'll be a really impossible feat every time. So my recommendation to you is the best companies that are doing it today have established a method for this is when we're up for rethinking. And that's where it stops being a via crucis, and then you get there, right? Now, let's talk about, is there one way to do this? Everybody goes for the cherry picking. Everybody goes for the simple, right? Less complex, most rewarding. But I'll tell you something. The other thing that people are trying to find is they're trying to find the magic bullet. And I'm really sorry to tell you, there is no magic bullet. I know you wanted to hear that there was. But understand, it's not IS, it's not SaaS, and it's not PaaS. There's some services that you should just SaaS away. In the previous language, you should just throw out and let somebody else run them for you, because you don't add any differentiated value, God forbid. And there's some services that you should run completely, right? You should IaaS them, whether it's internally or externally. So it's really not just about what's in the green box. It's also about what are you going to do with the other boxes and what's your strategy, but don't try to find this magic hammer. That's the typical, I don't know if you ever heard my VDI talk or my desktop strategy talk. It's about the same thing. It's you grab a hammer and you say, I'm going to build a house with just a hammer. That doesn't work. You need more tools. Each one is for a different purpose. For those of you who are looking for patterns, enjoy. I mean, what else would you need outside? I mean, you already understand them as soon as you see them. But trying to find one single pattern is a mistake. You see, trying to get in love with one pattern is a mistake here. Is you're going to have to educate yourself faster and more often on patterns, because you will have to find more diversity in them. And you will have to catalog which one you used. That's going to be the interesting part here. So far, so good? Everybody's like, no, I'm asleep. Let me go. This is the type of slide that I like in the sense of there's some services that you should just SaaS away, right? In the incorrect way of the word. And there's some apps that you should say for hybrid, I should just keep in. By the way, this came from Microsoft IT, and then I took this to a whole bunch of architects, mainly 20 architects from 20 global companies around the world. And I started sanitizing it until I got to this middle ground, right? So this is not just one company. This is the agreement of about 20 companies of how they're doing it. So it's sort of like a best practice-y type of neutral form. But basically what it says is there's some services that I'm just going to throw out and let somebody else run for me. That would be SaaS. For existing, I'm going to use hybrid. And for new, I'm going to set 3, 4, 5, 6 standards maximum and then just start consuming from those standards. But what's interesting is this zero-sum game. Am I going to start with physical or virtual? And once I start there, where do I get to the cloud? What is my next step? In other words, this is not an interesting slide. This is it. Are you ready for my most incorrect statement to date? That's a lot to say. Brace yourselves. So we all start in red, right? We all start with physical. Why is red physical? Because it consumes more electricity. That's it. Why is more electricity bad? Haven't you felt that climate changed? Really? I mean, which storm did not hit you? Which winter did not hit you that it hit us? Right? We're all in it together. So the more we're consuming here, the more we're hurting us. It's that simple. And so red is not necessarily good, but then you get to beautiful puke, which is virtual. And once you get to this horrible color, mustardish color, then you're like, well, that's it, right? But guess what? That's just the same mess, faster. The same mess you created in physical, but faster. Now you can make more of a mess. That's all you're getting out of this. And now you're like, okay, so I'm going to get to the blue skies of private cloud. Well, that may be beautiful, but once you're in private cloud, you're like, well, this is really hard. And this is really expensive. And you're right. Private cloud is really hard and it's really expensive. And not expensive in money. You're missing the point if you thought I was talking about money. It's about effort. It's really expensive in effort. Because it means that you have to be orderly, that you have to have controlled mechanisms, that you have to have standards. And I'll tell you the secret, everybody can do it once. The challenge is to do it sustainably over 5 years. Those are my heroes. See, my heroes is not the guy who comes in stage once and says, I did it. I build a new company. Everybody builds a new company. It's about were you sustainable and able to keep it up. So if you do that, then you get to, and I don't mean public, I want to say community, right? So there's a couple of ways to do this. I'll go very deep into my session tomorrow into this slide specifically. So if you're interested in seeing the whole how to private cloud and whatever and how we do it and what we recommend and what tools we have, I'll go into that tomorrow in the session. But it's very simple. It's about defining the services. It's about understanding how to define the fabric. And the fabric is the standards. The standards, I said, may, you know, create 3, not 15. And then you go into the architecture. So I don't know if you noticed, but all of us are going to go very fast into the architecture. We're going to say, step one, build the architecture. No, no, no. Step one is, who's going to consume your service? And what is this good for? Who's going to live in the house, right? So once you know who's going to live in the house, then you select, okay, what should we make the house of? And then, you don't like my analogy, here goes. Is the house for a lion or for chickens? Now you understand? That's a great analogy. If the house is for chickens, then a coop is rather simple to build. If I'm going to host there a half a ton lion that's hungry half of the time, I guess I should build it a little bit different. And then you go into the architecture. And then you have to understand that it's not about self-service. It's not about chargeback. It's about measuring consumption. Because if I measure consumption, everything else I can do. Let me explain myself. If you measure chargeback and you have the right unit of cost and you have the right method of measuring, but you don't know who the constituent is and what's the purpose for using, you will never charge correctly and they will be mad at you forever. Is that fair? So you have to understand who's using it and for what purpose first. Okay? So what's the unit? What are they using it for? And then you can go into all the rest of the stuff. So it's about measuring consumption before chargeback, showback, etc. And then last but not least, it's about being able to create dashboards. It's about being able to provide the service as a service. And dashboarding is a lost art. Because remember, you're not going to do banking in any type of environment that provides you with a paper statement once a month. That's what IT is doing today. Trust me, the service is up. Trust you. I don't want to trust you. I just want to see it. I want to see the exact same thing you're seeing. What you haven't gotten frustrated with an airline a person at the counter when they're clicking for more than 5 minutes and you don't know what they're clicking, the anxiety just builds, right? That's what the business feels with us. Is the anxiety builds. It's like, what the heck are they doing? Right? We're fixing it. We're fixing it. Hold on. It's like, what the heck are you fixing? You don't even know what the problem is, dude, and you're fixing it. Well, we're laughing, but I'm trying to tell you that's it. That's the problem right there. Is we're not treating them with the same respect that we want to be treated ourselves. And I mean that. Everybody's technical somehow. Well, you thought your CEO was a dumb person? Don't get me wrong, he's not. He's just as technical as you are, not in your field. That's the only difference. He may be very technical in financial engineering or in business process engineering. You just don't want to recognize it. So the point is, if you communicate with this level of respect, and that's the art of dashboarding. I'm sorry I'm not giving you an architecture for the dashboard. I'm just trying to tell you, if you don't go into this very thorny topic, and you don't put it as a first-class citizen like I'm doing right now, look, I'm spending 5 minutes on a slide that has a ton of topics, and I'm saying dashboard the heck out of your brain. Because the better you communicate with your user, the better he's going to be satisfied and tell you what the heck he wants. And you're going to be building the right thing to get your revenues and your margins up. Now, you're not in revenue and margin business. You're a government institution. Better service for your constituents. How is this bad? So with all that said, let's go into the sample architectures. I promised you we would do this, right? Long awaited. The first thing is, why are you backing up to tape? Just explain it to me slowly. I'm dumb, deaf, and whatever. Why the heck? When was the last time anybody was successful from getting stuff out of tape? Thank you. We have one volunteer. All of you, send your tapes to him. He knows how to do it. You know what, dude? That's exactly the point. I'm not kidding. That's exactly the point. It's like, I found one amongst how many? This is like Sodom and Gomorrah, right? There were 100 sinners and one saint. I'm sorry, I just called you a saint. All your sinners, horrible people. Not you ladies, by the way. No, sorry. Not you. It's just them. You get the point? So the most native format that you can store data is the best format to store data. Because once you try to do an audit, once you try to do a recovery, the more complex you're saving, the more complex you're recovering. Nobody told us this when we were in kindergarten. They all said, oh, this archiving mechanism is the cheapest and the best. But we'd never noticed that the purpose was not to back up. Never. It was never to back up. It was never to archive. It was to recover. So we missed it. It's like we went to school for going to school sick, not for graduating. You see the point? And not for learning. So it's about setting priorities straight. It's about if you're going to dump data somewhere, understand what the purpose of dumping the data is for. The second pattern is quite simple. It's recovery. And for recovery, you can have three methods. And this is really important because we don't do this type of architecting and thinking very often. One is, do I want to recover on another data center? Do I want to recover on the cloud? Or do I just want to have the means to recover once there is a catastrophic failure? Now, you don't believe me. Is there anybody here that can pronounce the name of the volcano in Iceland that crippled? I'm sure here I can find somebody that can say the name of that volcano. I can't. And thank you, sir. Yes. Exactly what he said. And then again, we have a saint and somebody who speaks Icelandic. So you see, you have two. The rest of you are still sinners. Now, you understand where I'm going here? You have to decide what's the recovery mechanism per service. Per service. Not as a whole. This I'm going to recover in this other data center in 3 nanoseconds just does not happen. It's per service. Once you architect this, the next method is simple. Why are you using elastic environments or perishable environments in your data center? Let's talk about this for a minute, okay? What do you do with development environments once they're done? You hopefully archive them and delete them, right? Hopefully. But think about it. How much percentage of your data center is dedicated to elastic environments or depreciated, whatever you want to call them, right? I can bet you right now it's at least 30%. Is that fair? At least 30% of your capacity is dedicated to whether it be development, testing, or user acceptance, and or compliancy acceptance. And my point is, why? Why are you paying the most expensive realty, and why are you spending your cycles on managing environments that should be elastic? Just buy it, use it, and then throw it away. So the easiest cloud adoption method has always been dev test, but it's for this reason. Now, it's not for this reason because of financial, it's because of this reason because of simplicity, because of ease. Because you don't need massive compliance and security for test data. Now you see where I'm going? So it's also easier on the lawyers, it's easier on your company, it's easier on your compliance officer, it's easier on your security officer. So that's why this is the easiest one. But let's go into the next one. By the way, this one just says something very simple, which is dev test on the cloud and promote to production on-prem. That's all I was saying. The next one is quite simple, which is this NAS-type applications like StorSimple that are popping up, which have three tiers. The first tier is they store on SSDs. The second tier is they store on slower but more, if you want, a longer term, or not even longer term disks, just slower disks or cheaper. And then the third level is cloud. Now, the way StorSimple works, which is quite interesting, is the first level, as you can see here, is deduplicated by nature. So as soon as you put something there, it gets deduped. The second tier, it gets compressed. And the third tier gets encrypted, and you keep the keys. So what's interesting about this is when you throw it on the cloud, you have no more access to the file. You archived it, essentially. And if you want it, you recall it, and then you get it back. But this is endless storage, in other words. You don't have to, so it's a set and forget type strategy. The beauty of it is not the strategy itself. It's not the device. Again, don't fall in love with the bicycle. I'm getting excited. I talk faster. Don't fall in love with the bicycle or the hammer. Understand the use cases. So pattern number one, archiving. Setting a file server naturally on this type of devices enables you to have archival as a piece of the service, not as an afterthought. Second, file shares. Third, SharePoint objects. Fourth, SQL, second and third tier. And fourth, virtual environment that you don't need anymore. And this could be with, as you can see, storage DRS with VMware or with us, etc. Okay? And then what we have is IaaS versus PaaS. Can anybody tell me what's the difference between IaaS versus PaaS in the Microsoft world? There's only one right answer, and there's only one line that you have to say. No, but yes. You see, that's how I raise children. That's why they're all confused. Exactly. It's, no, you said it right. It's you manage the VM versus we manage the VM for you. That's it. That's the whole difference. Everybody's like, wait, what difference part of this whole architecture is different? It's just the VM. It's either you run the OS and you configure the whole thing and you patch it, or we do it for you. That's the difference. Okay? I'll talk about a really brilliant PaaS service in a minute. So then, let's talk about identity. By the way, did you want me to run through all the different components of the PaaS? And I think you get it, and there's like 1,000 sessions that are going to do a better, deeper job of a full hour on each one of those components. So I'm just trying to set the patterns here. The next one is quite simple, which is identity, which is whether you encrypt and synchronize with on-prem, or whether you use third-party providers like Facebook, like LinkedIn, like Google+, like Outlook.com, and authenticate with them. Why would you want to do A or B? I'll give you a great example. I'm an airline, and I want to sell tickets out of the Facebook page. So I throw in my Facebook page as an airline a promotion for tickets to, I don't know, Madrid for the game that just happened, which nobody saw because it was a pretty good game. And you just like it, and then you get a quote. Wouldn't that be amazing? For a like, you get a quote. That's a fascinating service. How did I authenticate you? Now you understand where I'm going. I authenticated you via your Facebook identity. So this is a great example. It's a company that basically what they came to us and they said, we have 30,000 laptops, so corporate company-owned devices, and they authenticate with on-prem AD, and everything is good. But then we want to enable 15 to 55,000 BYOD. What's BYOD for them? Because it means different things to different people. Phones, tablets, and home PCs. So we said, super simple. Just enable synchronization with Azure AD. And I'm not kidding, 2 weeks later, they were authenticating and limiting the service for all the BYOD devices. How much overhead did they need in staff of IT? Zero. How much more money did they have to pay in AD servers? Zero. And let me see how we're doing on time. I think I'm right on it. Nope. 10 minutes. Ha ha, I got 10 minutes. In Mexican time, that's a ton of time, by the way. That's like 3 hours in your regular time continuum. For me, that's forever. And so, no, I'm about 5 minutes away or even less to finish, so don't worry. You're going to be on time, I promise. So then SQL is a beautiful example because SQL has three types of services that most people don't understand. And I mean this as database as a service, okay? So for database as a service, we have three types. First one is development, where you can, out of SQL, publish, compare, and sync to an IaaS service or a PaaS service in the cloud. I don't know if you realize, but nobody else has that. That's brilliant. And I mean that. That's brilliant. That's out of SQL, I can sync to a PaaS server of SQL DB on the cloud. The second thing I can do is I can backup recover. And depending on your version of SQL Server, which one of these tools would you use? And yes, it's VPN and encrypted. But the third one is the one I like the most. Because very few people are thinking about this today, and this is exactly the type of architecture I'm trying to promote with you, which is how do you do a synchronous commit, backup, availability groups, and periodic snapshots, as well as geo-replication, whether it be on an IaaS or PaaS architecture, without you having to set up a cluster for 6 weeks or 2 months. Let me say this in very slow Spanish, okay? Before, when you wanted to set up a geo-replicated SQL cluster, it took you a lot of effort. This was whatever. You can say 3 days for the most brilliant of you, 3 months for me, which I'm pretty dumb and whatever. Okay? This takes a couple clicks today. This is what we call destruction of the consulting method. Or in other words, as a service. Okay? Now you get it? You didn't like my analogy? I'll give you a different one. How long did it get to deploy a SharePoint infrastructure on-prem 2 years ago? Exactly. Pain in the you-know-what. Exactly. Endless. How long does it take today? 3 clicks on the cloud. Destruction of the consulting mechanism. You see my point? It's like if you can actually automate this, it becomes a fantastic service. So now the question is, did all your work and knowledge go away? No. You have to convert it from configuration work to actual architectural work now. So now you have to worry more about patterns, which is where you should have been at to begin with. Now, you're not going to like this example, and I'm okay with it. Because you know what? It's called legacy. Forget Windows Server 2003. It's an example. It's called anything legacy. For anything legacy, you're going to need 3 things. You're going to need a migration method or a factory, right? So you're going to need a method that includes tools, a program, fair? So far, so good? Again, a method, tools, a program, and scenarios. That's what this slide says. But it says something that I don't know if you just missed, which is, what about your volatile, what about your elastic environments for user acceptance testing? And for compatibility testing, that's where the cloud comes in. Per scenario, you select the pattern. Now you get the point. So you can get all hung up with me and say, oh, he was talking about Windows Server 2003. I can talk about your old databases. I can talk about your old websites. I can talk about your old line of business apps. I don't want to talk about all of them, but I could. You got the point. Okay. Let's finish this up. Last one, but not least. The God-fearing SAP. This is quite simple. I can skip. Did I skip a slide? Oh, it's because I God fear them. I don't know, man. My slide decks have a mind of their own. This is quite simple. It just says we're certified to run on the A5s, which is the small machines for production, and we are certified for all the rest, right? For user acceptance testing. And this is just a brilliant solution. We have some interesting companies who are doing Linux dev test on SAP and then production to on-prem, whether it be on different methods, supported or unsupported, they're doing it. I'm not promoting it, I'm just telling you patterns. Most of the people are saying, well, if I have it on SQL, then why the heck not? And they're doing all of the elastic environments on the cloud. Again, this is an elastic environment conversation. I give you a ton of cool examples. I like this 3. Dun, 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 dun. There you go. Diebold, company who makes the ATM machines. They have an interesting service. You can read the case study. Through tablets, you see the service happening on the ATMs live. That's running on the cloud. If you want to get more secure than that, I don't know how you could get it, so it's pretty interesting. Why Washington Post? Because the owner of Washington Post is the owner of Amazon Web Services, so it's fascinating to me. And I want to have some fun too. It's not okay that you're the only ones having fun. And then the last one but not least, because I'm from Mexico and that's the tax authority of Mexico. And why that one? Because it runs on PASS. Now let me translate that to your perfect Spanish. I know some of you don't like me speaking Spanish, but that's what you get, you're in Spain. 120 million people are in Mexico. It's not just Cancun. I promise. It took you a while to digest that one, by the way. You're like, so it's not a small country, right? 120 million people. It's a fair size. It's quite big, by the way. And even with all of its wonderful challenges, and I love it, it has some fascinating things like 2 billion documents for tax purposes, and this has been running on the cloud for the last 5 years on Azure. So the whole taxation system has been running on Azure for the past 5 years. This architecture had to be approved in Congress. I want to see the last time you had to pass your architectures through Congress. Okay? So talk to me about compliancy and data sovereignty. Brilliant solution, brilliant, brilliant, brilliant guys. Fascinating, okay, in every sense. And no, there's never a piece of data on the cloud that stays on the cloud. So even if you try to hack it, you would hack as just a processing machine. Because all that we have up there is just a processing machine. You take part of the data, put it up, processes it, puts it down. Even if you get that part of data, you wouldn't know whose it is, and you wouldn't get a complete tax package. So you wouldn't get enough to do anything with it. And that's what's fascinating about this. It's a different pattern. So with that said, thank you for your time. Thank you for your patience. Sorry for my jokes. Thank you for being at the conference. Appreciate you deeply.